General relativity completely changed the discussion of the origin and fate of the universe. A static universe could have existed forever or could have been created in its present form at some time in the past. However, if galaxies are moving apart now, it means that they must have been closer together in the past. About 15 billion years ago, they would all have been on top of each other, and the density would have been very large. This state was called the primeval atom by the Catholic priest Georges Lemaître, who was the first to investigate the origin of the universe that we now call the Big Bang. Einstein seems never to have taken the Big Bang seriously. He apparently thought that the simple model of a uniformly expanding universe would break down if one followed the motions of the galaxies back in time, and that the small sideways velocities of the galaxies would cause them to miss each other. He thought the universe might have had a previous contracting phase, with a bounce into the present expansion at a fairly moderate density. However, we now know that in order for nuclear reactions in the early universe to produce the amounts of light elements we observe around us, the density must have been at least 10 tons per cubic inch, and the temperature 10 billion degrees. Further observations of the microwave background indicate that the density was probably once a trillion, 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 one with 72 zeros after it, tons per cubic inch. We also now know that Einstein's general theory of relativity does not allow the universe to bounce from a contracting phase to the present expansion. As will be discussed in Chapter 2, Roger Penrose and I were able to show that general relativity predicts that the universe began in the Big Bang. So Einstein's theory does imply that time has a beginning, although he was never happy with the idea. Einstein was even more reluctant to admit that general relativity predicted that time would come to an end for massive stars when they reached the end of their life and no longer generated enough heat to balance the force of their own gravity, which was trying to make them smaller. Einstein thought that such stars would settle down to some final state, but we now know that there are no final state configurations for stars of more than twice the mass of the Sun. Such stars will continue to shrink until they become black holes, regions of space-time that are so warped that light cannot escape from them. When a massive star exhausts its nuclear fuel, it will lose heat and contract. The warping of space-time will become so great that a black hole will be created from which light cannot escape. Inside the black hole, time will come to an end. Penrose and I showed that general relativity predicted that time would come to an end inside a black hole, both for the star and for any unfortunate astronaut who happened to fall into it. But both the beginning and the end of time would be places where the equations of general relativity could not be defined. Thus, the theory could not predict what should emerge from the Big Bang. Some saw this as an indication of God's freedom to start the universe off in any way God wanted. But others, including myself, felt that the beginning of the universe should be governed by the same laws that held at other times. We've made some progress toward this goal, as will be described in Chapter 3, but we don't yet have a complete understanding of the origin of the universe. The reason general relativity broke down at the Big Bang was that it was not compatible with quantum theory, the other great conceptual revolution of the early 20th century. The first step toward quantum theory had come in 1900, when Max Planck in Berlin discovered that the radiation from a body that was glowing red hot was explainable if light could be emitted or absorbed, only if it came in discrete packets called quanta. In one of his groundbreaking papers, written in 1905, when he was at the patent office, Einstein showed that Planck's quantum hypothesis could explain what is called the photoelectric effect, the way certain metals give off electrons when light falls on them. This is the basis of modern light detectors and television cameras, and it was for this work that Einstein was awarded the Nobel Prize for Physics. Einstein continued to work on the quantum idea into the 1920s, but he was deeply disturbed by the work of Werner Heisenberg in Copenhagen, Paul Dirac in Cambridge, and Erwin Schrödinger in Zurich, who developed a new picture of reality called quantum mechanics. No longer did tiny particles have a definite position and speed. Instead, The more accurately one determined a particle's position, the less accurately one could determine its speed, and vice versa. Einstein was horrified by this random, unpredictable element in the basic laws, and never fully accepted quantum mechanics. His feelings were expressed in his famous dictum, "God does not play dice." Most other scientists, however, accepted the validity of the new quantum laws because of the explanations they gave for a whole range of previously unaccounted-for phenomena and their excellent agreement with observations. They are the basis of modern developments in chemistry, molecular biology, and electronics, and the foundation for the technology that has transformed the world in the last 50 years. In December 1932, aware that the Nazis and Hitler were about to come to power, Einstein left Germany and 4 months later renounced his citizenship, spending the last 20 years of his life at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey. In Germany, the Nazis launched a campaign against Jewish science and the many German scientists who were Jews. This is part of the reason that Germany was not able to build an atomic bomb. Einstein and relativity were principal targets of this campaign. When told of the publication of a book entitled 100 Authors Against Einstein, he replied, "Why 100? If I were wrong, one would have been enough." After the Second World War, he urged the Allies to set up a world government to control the atomic bomb. In 1948, he was offered the presidency of the new state of Israel, but turned it down. He once said, "Politics is for the moment, but an equation is for eternity." The Einstein equations of general relativity are his best epitaph and memorial. They should last as long as the universe. The world has changed far more in the last 100 years than in any previous century. The reason has not been new political or economic doctrines, but the vast developments in technology made possible by advances in basic science. Who better symbolizes those advances than Albert Einstein? Chapter 2. The Shape of Time. Einstein's general relativity gives time a shape. How this can be reconciled with quantum theory. What is time? Is it an ever-rolling stream that bears all our dreams away, as the old hymn says? Or is it a railroad track? Maybe it has loops and branches, so you can keep going forward and yet return to an earlier station on the line. The 19th-century author Charles Lamb wrote, "Nothing puzzles me like time and space, and yet nothing troubles me less than time and space, because I never think of them." Most of us don't worry about time and space most of the time, whatever that may be, but we all do wonder sometimes what time is, how it began, and where it is leading us. Any sound scientific theory, whether of time or of any other concept, should, in my opinion, be based on the most workable philosophy of science. The positivist approach put forward by Karl Popper and others. According to this way of thinking, a scientific theory is a mathematical model that describes and codifies the observations we make. A good theory will describe a large range of phenomena on the basis of a few simple postulates, and will make definite predictions that can be tested. If the predictions agree with the observations, the theory survives that test, though it can never be proved to be correct. On the other hand, if the observations disagree with the predictions, one has to discard or modify the theory. At least, that is what is supposed to happen. In practice, people often question the accuracy of the observations and the reliability and moral character of those making the observations. If one takes the positivist position, as I do, one cannot say what time actually is. All one can do is describe what has been found to be a very good mathematical model for time and say what predictions it makes. Isaac Newton gave us the first mathematical model for time and space in his Principia Mathematica, published in 1687. Newton occupied the Lucasian chair at Cambridge that I now hold, though it wasn't electrically operated in his time. In Newton's model, time and space were a background in which events took place, but which wasn't affected by them. Time was separate from space, and was considered to be a single line or railroad track that was infinite in both directions. Time itself was considered eternal, in the sense that it had existed and would exist forever.